Imagine being told that knowing how to make cloth essential to your culture is a lost art, that all the people who know the technique are long dead and gone. And now imagine this bad news is told to you in 1870 in the Kingdom of Hawaii. That's exactly what happened then. Hawaiian kapa making was a lost art, but over a century later, love, determination, research, and hard practical efforts brought it back to life. And today it thrives again. We're glad to have one of the most dedicated practitioners of kapa making, Dalani Tanahi, joining us by phone this morning. Aloha, Dalani.
Aloha. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're very, very welcome. This is fascinating. Even back in the days of the kingdom, kapa was a lost art. And, of course, before we get into that, tapa versus kapa, you explain that.
Oh, well, it's more a matter of semantics. Because people were so used, especially in Hawaii, people were really used to seeing South Pacific tapa. Mm-hmm. And tapa, by the way, is kind of a catch-all name. All cultures had their own specific names to describe bark cloth, the right. process, and the plants. And when I started doing this and teaching it, I started referencing all of the Hawaiian bark cloth as kapa, mostly to put a new image in people's minds, because our work is very different from Samoan, Tongan, Fijian. They all have their differences.
Right.
And I started calling it kapa just so when people thought of kapa as opposed to tapa, they would have a different image in their mind of what they think of when they hear tapa, like the tapa bar and
right.
that kind of thing like that. So.
Exactly. So with they don't really use the T in modern Hawaiian anymore, or maybe Tawai, some of the older dialects, Niihau.
Yeah, Niihau style and like that. But over here, we call it kapa, and that's what people pretty much know now. We're talking about the Hawaiian version of the bark cloth.
So the Hawaiian Renaissance, which started a century later, especially, I mean, when it comes to kapa, is
mm-hmm.
How did that come about?
Well, I think during that time, you know, with the hokulea and these kind of things, people, you know, stays that happened in 59, by the 70s, people were looking back and going, hey, you know, we did a lot of cool things. Let's go and revisit some of that stuff, like open ocean voyaging. And some of the arts that people started looking at were kapa. And in the late 60s and early 70s, there were a few people who were kind of inspired to go and start doing that. Malia Solomon, Pua Van Dorp, and then Marie McDonald and Moana Isley. And none of these people started, and everyone kind of got into it for their own reasons. People didn't start doing it as a group of women who said, hey, let's all do kapa. People kind of just found their own calling and started doing it. I started doing it in about 1996. It's almost 20 years now, and I was lucky that I was hired to teach this to children.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I learned it, I was actually learning it as a teacher / student. And that's pretty much been the theme of many of us because, you know, as it being an art that people stopped,
haumana,
then,
kumu, kumu,
really
haumana.
Kind of find it from the DNA.
Exactly. So the research must have, I mean, a lot of it had to be really, really hands-on because of so much, sort of like, I think of Maupiai Logan getting non-instrument
mm-hmm,
navigation back.
Mm-hmm.
So where's the hands that you guys just go, is it Vauke or Vauke? Which is the correct pronunciation?
Vauke or Vauke, either one.
Okay.
You know, there was a lot of material about it because so much about kapa and tapa was written by observers
uh-huh.
from, you know, the people on Captain Cook's boats and the voyagers and the whalers and the missionaries all the way down to, you know, in Kamakau and John Papa'i'i. They all wrote extensively about kapa. It was very beloved and, you know, a lot of it ended up in Europe and collections all over the world because people really loved it and were impressed with it.
Supreme irony. Where do you find it? Learn from
right.
Europe. What?
Well, really. I mean, it was really, I was at British Museum last year, and they have a huge, huge collection. They finally did the first exhibit of some of their 900 pieces of Polynesian bark cloth that they have. So people really did love it. And, you know, the only ones who didn't write about it, interestingly, were the Hawaiian women who, at the time, in the mid-1900s, were very capable of writing about it. And kind of, you know, with all the things that happened, with all the sectors that kapa was used in, it began to seem to me that the Hawaiian women did not have a huge problem embracing the new technology of fabric,
uh-huh.
which was not new. It was being introduced to them from the very beginning of the sea captains. People kind of like to throw down the Christians did a thing. But
right.
really, women were being exposed to fabric for a very long time.
Like the palaka cloth.
You know,
and
in Hawaii, the Hawaiian kapa got better and better and better after contact
uh-huh.
because they got metal to make better tools. They got new dyes. They saw fabric. They got impressed with a lot of these things, and they really changed up their kapa from what was gathered during Captain Cook's time up to the time they stopped by the end of the, of the 1800s.
So a rough nutshell. We've only got about 2 minutes right now, but you start with your own oak tree in the backyard, if possible. If you get some, just grow your own, essentially, and go from there.
Essentially, you have to. If you're going to be a practitioner, you need to have the Vulcan, or at least a lot of the people will help out at different botanical gardens, and they'll help take care of those Vulcan and then get to use it. But, it's not a difficult plant to grow. It can get all over the place, but it's first thing you need to have, definitely.
Yes, I guess for some reason, a lot of people think there must be this paper mulberry tree, this huge. No, it's a very, very small thing, and you have to be very delicate in doing it. The techniques that you've talked about, it's not that easy at first, but you just do it, and you do it, and you learn, and you learn.
Exactly. The best way to learn is just keep doing it.
How about the dyes and everything else, and the beaters and the watermarking?
Exactly. And, that's kind of one of the things that made kapa and continues to make kapa not as, huge as an art, is that there are so many components to it. You have to make tools. You have to find your dyes. You have to grow your plants. You have to make your stamps and do all these things. There are many arts within the art of kapa making. It's not just get a tree and sit down and pound it. Where's that tree coming from? Where's that beater coming from? Where's that anvil coming from? Where's that time coming from? Because it is still very time-consuming. People always ask me, hey, what if we made a machine to make that kapa? I said, yeah, and we'll call it paper, because I'm pretty sure that's what they already do. the whole romance of it is the fact that we still sit and very laboriously and very lovingly are tapping and tapping and pounding and pounding and hoping the neighbors don't complain when you're out there at 9 o'clock at night still beating that kapa.
Everything old is new again. I wish we could go on and on, but unfortunately the time just burns through. But I want to thank you so much, and I know that there's going to be lectures and exhibitions. So, Dalani, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you so much, Bill.
Dalani Tanahi is helping make Hawaiian kapa and teaching others how to do it for over 20 years. Ho'omau, the Perpetuation of Kapa exhibit, opens this Friday at the Hawaii State Art Museum, and Dalani will be telling the story of kapa there at noon on May 31st. Our Facebook page, Hawaii Conversation, has details.